This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, senior fellow, writing at Defining Ideas about the Supremacy Clause in the Constitution of the United States and its interpretation by the Governor of Texas, the Attorney General of the United States, and the Supreme Court of the United States through these decades. We begin, however, with a story that this is about the tragedies at the border between Mexico and the United States, in particular Texas. I mentioned that I have been reporting on the Great Migration worldwide for many weeks and will continue because many populations are dislocated by crime, by geopolitics, by climate, by just the circumstances of their poverty. However, in particular at the border with Texas, what we're seeing now are large numbers of human beings seeking a better life for their children, hence they're bringing children, or the children are unaccompanied when they cross the border, or the women are pregnant or carrying small children. I tell the tragedy best by describing what's going on the way to the Mexican border in a place called the Darien Gap, which is 60 miles of triple canopy jungle between Colombia and Panama. This is in the isthmus. This is the part of Central America where it narrows. And Panama was annexed by the United States more than 100 years ago in order to build the Panama Canal. Well, that jungle was never solved. And when they built the Pan-American Highway, they stopped in Panama, started again in Colombia. There's a 60-mile gap. See? It's a Darien province. Through that gap are pouring at first hundreds, then thousands, then tens of thousands of migrants from around the world, not just Latin America, not just Cuba and Haiti, but from Africa, from Asia, all manner pouring through that gap, understanding that they can find transportation north to the Mexican border and enter the United States. And in reporting that I've done, many are successful. In fact, the border appears to the migrants coming through that gap who speak of these matters as open, especially for pregnant women, especially for women with small children. There are a number of anecdotes that are horror about the robbers and the marauders in the gap and in this area. There are reports routinely of women and children being murdered. I mention all this because Richard is about to explicate what is going on at the Texas border, but it affects the whole system of great migration. What is to be done? Richard, forgive my anecdote, but this is reporting in these last days, and it's important to illustrate your very careful explication. I go now to the Supremacy Clause of the United States, yes. Article 6. The Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made, under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state, to the contrary notwithstanding. That, you tell me in your essay, illustrates the contest between Governor Abbott and Attorney General Garland. Good evening to you, Richard.
Yes, good evening. Yes, this is basically the tip of a very large iceberg, the way in which these things are put together. The first thing to note is when this article was adopted back in 1787, the institution of judicial review at the center in the United States was not established, and it's very difficult to find the explicit authorization for it. So you actually look at the clause, what they say, and the judges of every state shall be bound thereby, right? Making it appear as though this was directed to state judges who were interpreting finally the federal constitution. Well, obviously that's going to be an extremely unstable relationship. And so what happens is eventually the judicial review takes over and it's the federal government who starts to say this. But then you still have yet another trap because it has to be under the constitution or made pursuance thereto. And so if it turns out that the constitution does not give the Congress the power to do something, you can't find a constitutional authorization and you cannot find a statutory authorization. If you can find those two things, what they're basically saying is the lowliest of federal regulation will dominate the most majestic of state constitutional principles. That's what we mean by the question of supremacy. So that's the first question. The second question that always comes up is exactly if Congress has that power, were they prepared to preempt everything? And the answer to that question is no. There was a famous case involving Rice and Santa Fe Railroad, and an obscure technical question I long forgot. done. But Justice Douglas said there's three big exceptions to preemption when you look at the statute. He says if it creates a conflict to certain individuals, they can't live with you, don't have to do that. If it turns out that it occupies a particular field, or if it turns out that it frustrates the purposes of some major situation, oftentimes federal laws are going to have to yield to state laws under various kinds of situations. So it's not as though it's cut and dry as to where the one begins and where the one ends. So in this particular case, the closer you are to an essential federal function, including migration, the more likely it is that you're going to find preemption, the technical term being, again, occupying the field so that states can't alter the punishments up or down from what the federal government does. But the moment you move a little bit further away from it, is it clear that the federal government has the power to tell states they can't enforce their own laws on criminal trespasses against the illegal aliens? And that's kind of the way in which this problem is starting to emerge. Governor Abbott basically says, look, immigrants come in, they despoil the property and so forth. He tries to basically make sure, and he's going to lose on this one, that the federal government can't subcontract out its work to other people. It's a dead loser. But on the other hand, his second point is that once these people merge with the general population, the federal government cannot tell me that I cannot protect the under the state police power what's going on. Otherwise, the federal government could essentially abolish the state law of criminal trespass, and nobody believes that the states are simply subsidiary organizations of the federal government, the way in which counties, for example, are subsidiary organizations of the states.
We have decisions through the years about this same contest, and my reading of these decisions is that it has not been resolved as recently as 2012, Arizona versus the United States. I want to crash to that, and then we'll back up to earlier decisions. Justice Kennedy wrote the decision that you're citing here in the majority, and my memory of Justice Kennedy is an extremely agreeable man who sought to find the middle ground in every instance. I believe that that was called the swing vote. And from your explication here, it appears that he was trying to find the middle ground on this same contest. Did I read you correctly?
Yeah, he was always a great balancer. And there are many cases in which he created an immense amount of confusion by being the fifth vote on an idiosyncratic figure. So you did not know whether the majority of which he was part was binding precedent because he had somewhat novel grounds on which these cases were decided. And generally speaking, what he was is somebody who always thought there was something to be said on both sides of every issue. And so he was always prepared to say, well, I have to look at this and I have to look at this. And I was sometimes that works, but the kinds of cases it never really works on is when you're trying to figure out what the jurisdictional limits are of a given body. To say, well, and maybe you've got this and maybe you don't have it, it's not what you need. What you need to do is to say, here's a territorial line that has to basically figure out what the physical domains of a country or a state is. And then you have to have clear lines as to what kinds of is falling under one or another kind of situation. So what's the navigable water of the United States? He once asked in a case called Rapanis. And you know what? He couldn't figure it out. So he's going to remand the case back. And this then gets you to these crazy situations where it turns out you get uplands which may or may not feed waters into rivers miles away, may or may not be a navigable water under the balancing test that Justice Kennedy puts forward. And why does that matter? Because the dissenters in that particular case were willing to let the federal government do anything. Justice Scalia was much tougher. So you balance in the middle. And that's what he's trying to do here. And how does it happen? Well, he says, look, I mean, they're really powerful interests on the other side with respect to the state and their police power. Nobody wants to minimize them. Full stop. But then what happens is he never quite indicates what those reserved powers to the state are and whether or not the federal government can trench upon them, and if so, how, and if not, why not. So this becomes essentially the source of real open stuff on. And when, you know, Garland comes forward and starts to assert the dominance of the federal government, he's surely going to win on the question about whether or not it can organize its immigration services to use private contractors. But it's not clear that he's going to win on the question as to whether or not the state of Texas has to sit by and do nothing when property of its citizens is damaged by illegal aliens. That becomes a terrible problem. And here, of course, it gets muddy again because the statutory term is illegal aliens. People like to call them undocumented. And there's a big difference between the two. Undocumented may be legal, but there's no such thing as a legally illegal alien. And so the change in the terminology is meant to soften the nature of the offense. And that political override, right, then starts to influence the way in which you think about these substantive questions. So not only do you have the jurisdiction battles, you've got these terminological sleights of hand that are taking place, which makes it very difficult for anybody to put this thing together in some kind of a coherent whole, which is why in the end you have to start really thinking about political compromises, deals that are going to be cut between these parties, because if you try to do it through adjudication case by case, the system will fall apart.
I'm speaking to Professor Richard Epstein at the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. We're looking at the tragedy at the Mexican-American border, extending in all directions. However, this turns on the powers of the state and the powers of the federal government. And I said we would go back in time. There is a decision that Richard brings to my attention, Hines versus Davidowitz, 1941. And does this explain, or in some fashion empower, Attorney General Garland to override the decision of Governor Abbott of Texas? When we come back, this is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.